It's a pleasure to be here. I've heard so much about this new movement. And I just want to tell you that I've had an extremely busy week, and I really would not have come had it not been for the imploring of Bracha Lieberman. Where is she? Renee, where are you? Bracha, okay. So she gets a lot of credit. She was one of the best students I ever had in high school. Not too many years ago. Really, what I'd like to share with you is a changing perception that's really not so well known. And I just want to tell you that I've had an extremely busy week, and I really would not have come had it not been for the imploring of Bracha Lieberman. Where is she? Renee, where are you? Bracha, okay. So she gets a lot of credit. She was one of the best students I ever had in high school. Not too many years ago. Really, what I'd like to share with you is a changing perception that's really not so well known, although we've been talking about it for years already, perhaps decades. But the truth of the matter is that the Baal Tshuva movement, the return to Judaism, I believe has reached a state of maturity and a critical state in the United States and perhaps throughout the world. So much so that it's really a revolution that's sweeping America and rapidly gaining momentum. And I'd like to share some tidbits of information in order to underscore this and to drive this point home, just to see how much has changed in the last 5, 7, 8, 9 years. For instance, in a national soap opera on national television, Days of Our Lives, just about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, there was an episode on Days of Our Lives which featured a Jewish female doctor who had a relationship with a non-Jewish male doctor, and he was studying for conversion. And ultimately, over a number of episodes, the relation foundered because he did not desire to have a full religious conversion. And this was featured on national television. It was one of the subplots, The Days of Our Lives. And it's quite amazing because something like this never, ever would have happened before. Of course, the reason for this is because a woman by the name of Leah Toporoff, who's a graduate of Stern College, is the chief writer for Days of Our Lives. But also, that's also something very, very new, that the people of that background and that ilk would never have been hired for these types of positions. In a pilot program called Mariah on ABC about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, a program written by Alan Light, who was the producer of Kate and Ally, and the Emmy Award-winning writer of The Adam, which featured the disappearing boy Adam Walsh in Florida. The story was basically about a psychiatrist, a woman psychiatrist, who was played by Tova Feltschuh. Tova Feltschuh lives on the Upper West Side. She's not a religious Jew, as far as I know, although she has a strong Jewish identity. It just so happens that she has a cousin, a first cousin, whose name was Dale Gottlieb. His name now is Rabbi David Gottlieb of Or Sameach. He used to be Professor Dale Gottlieb. He was the chairman of the Department of Philosophy at Johns Hopkins, and one of the leading lights in the philosophy movement. Apropos, or just coincidental, what's happened in pure philosophy in America today is also quite remarkable. In virtually all the major universities today, the pure philosophy departments are headed by either frum-from-birth Jews or Baalei Tshuva, or philosophers who have become Baalei Tshuva. It's quite an amazing thing that the leading lights of contemporary pure philosophy today are almost all Orthodox Jews. In any case, Tova Feltschuh played this character of a chief psychiatrist in what was the equivalent of Sing Sing then. And she used to consult with her father, the Rebbe, back in Brooklyn. And she, in even one episode, her boyfriend shows up, who was a tall man, wearing a yarmulke on national TV, and they explain why they don't touch. And when she used to walk in and out of rooms, she used to kiss the mezuzah. So this is on national television in the 1980s, the late 1980s. Eyewitness News, when the article in New York Magazine, the cover story on New York Magazine about the return of Jews on the Upper West Side appeared, A week later, Eyewitness News called Lincoln Square and asked to do a feature, a television feature, on the return of Jews in the Upper West Side. But they insisted that the interview had to take place in time for a particular week. It had to be like very, very soon the week or the following week. And I asked why, and they said because it's the sweeps week. That's when they do the Nielsen ratings find out how many viewers there are and to establish the rates that they can get from advertisers. So I said, why do you want to have it during the sweeps week? So they said, because we think that this is an incredible story and it's going to increase our viewership. It's like, their term actually was sexy. It's a sexy story, the return of Jews to Orthodoxy is like an amazing story. So I scratched my head and I wanted to pry a little bit, and I said, you know, who made this decision, you know, that this was the thing that you wanted to feature during that week, and they were going to do three or four stories on it during that week. And I figured, you know, ABC is right across the street from Lincoln Square Synagogue, and maybe they see the activity there, you know, maybe, you know, they have Jewish executives who are making this decision. They said it was the executives in the Loop in Chicago. So apparently the executives in the Loop in Chicago felt that this was going to be a story that was going to increase the ratings of Eyewitness News. The Village Voice, the Holy Village Voice, not generally known as a newspaper that's friendly to Jews, certainly not conservative Jews with a small c, certainly not Orthodox Jews with a big O, featured a story in 3-inch headlines, and the headlines on the front page of April 21st, 1987 wrote, "Back to Shul, the return of New York's wandering Jews." And there was a lead story, cover story, about how Jews are returning to shuls. They featured the Reform Temple and the Conservative Temple, Reconstruction Temple, Lincoln Square Synagogue, etc., etc. This is an amazing thing. It's just amazing. It means that the tone, the tenor, the attitudes are changing. There's an entire breakdown of the resistance of the stereotypes that they used to be before. The Sunday Times business section had a full-page feature on new developments in kosher food. They claimed that the major companies in America have rediscovered the value of rabbinic certification in expanding sales. Around Passover time and around Rosh Hashanah, the New York Times now runs a supplement, an advertising supplement called Jewish Living, which features sort of yuppie type of elegant Jewish living. 1985, which was the equivalent of 2020 on NBC, featured a 14-minute story on a Baal Tshuva and a Baalas Tshuva and their marriage. And then public television picked it up, expanded it to 30 minutes, and featured it around Pesach time a year ago about a Baal Tshuva and a Baalas Tshuva, how they were married. Nightline featured a half-hour episode on the Munkacha wedding. And I would have imagined that they were going to make mincemeat out of the Munkacha wedding. And they didn't. They were very, very respectful. It was quite an amazing story. None of this ever could have happened 10 years ago. It's just as if traditional Judaism has turned the corner in America. It's no longer looked upon as primitive, as medieval, as an impossible option. How did this happen? And why has it been happening? Well, basically what's happened is that there's been an incredible attitudinal change as a result of significant exposure of significant people to traditional Judaism and to traditional practices. I believe it really started, and it's interesting where the change really started, although it's been happening for decades, for scores of years. But I believe that the real break came in the media, specifically in the media, and because the media has so much impact on our lives, came in a spectacular story in a newspaper magazine of all places called Rolling Stone. Rolling Stone. I don't have the exact date, but it was in the late 70s that Ellen Willis wrote a story about her brothers becoming a Baal Tshuva. Ellen Willis is a feature writer, famous feature writer, feminist for Village Voice. And her brother Gary became a Baal Tshuva through Eisha Torah. And there was a spectacular story, a full-length story, very philosophical, very deep, about her brother's return to Judaism and how she even explored it and then rejected it. And it's just a marvelous piece. If you can get a hold of it, it's just fantastic to read. And then it was quiet for a long time. Obviously not that many people on the front lines in the conventional circles had an opportunity to read Rolling Stone. It wasn't that popular then. But the counterculture people read it. And many, many Jewish counterculture people read it. And then the next breakthrough came in 1984, in October of 1984, when Natalie Gittleson, who is the executive editor of McCall's magazine, wrote a story in the Sunday Times magazine called Jews, American Jews Rediscovering Orthodox. American Jews Rediscover Orthodox. Now, I don't know whether that headline is true or not, whether American Jews are rediscovering Orthodoxy. Certainly back in 1984, I don't know if that was true. It's true that some American Jews were rediscovering Orthodoxy, but a lot of Orthodox Jews were also discovering secular life at the same time. And to this very day, I'm not sure that the balance really has turned. But the Holy New York Times, the newspaper of record, said in bold headlines, American Jews rediscover Orthodoxy. Well, if the New York Times says it, then you must believe it. And in a headline, in the Sunday Times magazine, and it was written in such a way that had such a deep impact because it exploited the most prurient interests of American Jews. What do I mean by that? It wasn't sexually oriented, but it was materialistically oriented. Basically, the message of that article was that you can become rich and famous. You can become a leading light of America and still be Jewish. So it showed a multi-millionaire investment banker standing on his terrace overlooking Central Park South with a talisman and a bowler cap. It showed the producer of Kate and Ally walking to shul with his two children. It showed a Nobel Prize winning scientist working at his sukkah. And that's all you had to show. All you had to do was show that you don't have to give up your Jewishness and you can still be successful. That article itself, even if people never read it, that's what's so important about these things. If you just see the headlines, changes attitudes. Because that's really the critical issue in American Jewish life. Everybody thinks of an Orthodox shul as, let's say, a place with a spittoon, you know, where they spit in, you know, and the place stinks and it reeks and it's unsightly and uncomely, and that it's primitive and medieval. But all of a sudden you see yuppies, or what we now call fruppies, right, from yuppies, okay, who are excited about their Judaism and claim that it enriches their lives. Then obviously not everybody who reads the Sunday New York Times is going to run out and buy a pair of tefillin or, you know, dip themselves in the mikveh. But it will change attitudes. The next time someone says to them, come to a Friday night Shabbos meal, or come to a lecture in a shul, they might not be so quick to reject it. And that's really what's happened. Then after the New York magazine featured, you know, the film writer and the investment banker on the front cover with the sunset in the background of Lincoln Towers. I mean, that was it, you know, that was it. And it really did have an impact. The cumulative effect of the media and just people talking it up. And what happened really, and here I really have to give a lot of credit to Natalie Gittleson. Natalie Gittleson, the executive editor of McCall's, wrote that article in the Sunday Times. Is a very influential person who knows almost all the influential people. And she really talked it up about her experiences, her children's experiences, her experiences in shul, and even the feminist aspect of it, and, you know, brought Betty Friedan into the picture and brought the editor of Macmillan's into the picture, who was, like, unbelievable. So a lot of people, especially in the media and in writing and in the publishing houses, really, really got an introduction, a positive introduction to Judaism, even though none of them, as far as I know, ever became Orthodox. Although many of them became very, very Jewish conscious. One of the most radical changes really took place in publishing, where before the mid-1980s, you never encountered a book where there was a positive Jewish image who was a positive figure in a novel or in a book. And all of a sudden, things changed overnight. That the New Yorker published Holy Days, Liz Harris's memoir of what it was like to be with Lubavitch, and did it in 3 consecutive issues. An amazing, amazing thing. And all of a sudden, books started coming out, and the negative stereotypes of Malamud and Roth were discarded for positive images of Orthodox Jews, some of whom were actually the heroes of the books. And that was an amazing thing. And that was true because some of the editors-in-chief really had a very, very positive experience with their Judaism. Norman Podhoretz of Commentary Magazine, Joseph Papp, suddenly discovered that he was Jewish. Everybody thought he was Italian. And now he's speaking Yiddish and running Yiddish shows. Norman Rahr Mailer threatened to write a book about his Jewishness, and everybody hopes he doesn't. The intelligentsia, the opinion makers, the opinion shakers, actors. Andre Gregory, for my dinner with Andre. Andre Gregory grew up, he was baptized as a Russian Orthodox. He never even knew that he was Jewish. Nobody knew he was Jewish. So now he's Yosef Gregory. Yosef Gregory, amazing. He's studying for his bar mitzvah now. He's taking Torah lessons 3 times a week. Comes to shul regularly. Andre Gregory. It's an amazing thing. Richard Bernstein, the chief of the Paris Bureau of the New York Times, comes to shul regularly now. It's an amazing thing. He recently introduced me to A.M. Rosenthal. A.M. Rosenthal used to be the managing editor of the New York Times. So I said to Abe Rosenthal, I said, you know, I have to tell you the truth. I said, when you were the managing editor of the New York Times, everybody, especially the Orthodox Jews in America, hated you because they thought that you were responsible for the policy and the editorial policy of the New York Times. Since you've become a columnist of the New York Times, you're a folk hero. A folk hero, everything that you write is positive. And he said to me, the tragedy is, here he is, certainly was the most powerful newspaper man in the world. He said, the tragedy is, I never had a Jewish education. And he really admitted that he knows absolutely nothing about Jews. And hopefully, with the influence of Bernstein and some others at the time, the Times is going to change that. What's also happened is that aside from the conventional Jewish Orthodox wealth, let's say like, you know, the Stone, Weiss, American greeting cards in Cleveland, and the Reichmans, there now is an amazing phenomenon. And it's a double-edged sword. Assimilation in America is so rampant that the truth of the matter is, it's like the plagues in Egypt. That Makat Bechoros, Torah says, Ein Bayis Asher Ein Sham Neis. There is no house where there is no victim. Every single home in Egypt had a victim. And in America too. There is no home where there is no victim. Every single one of the noblest families in America has victims. Intermarried, lost generations. But the amazing thing is that we're now talking about Ein Bayis Asher Ein Sham Chai. There is no home in America of the noblest and wealthiest homes in America where someone has not been touched by the Tshuva Revolution. There is no home where there is not either a principal or a child or a grandchild who has not become a Baal Tshuva. And this includes some of the most amazing families and influential families. Tishman. There are 2 Tishmans who are now Orthodox. Bernstein. Pritzker has a grandson. Milstein has a son who lives up in Muncie. Belzberg alone can change the landscape of the American Jewish community. Wexner, the owner of the Limited, one of the biggest developers in New Jersey, one of the biggest investment bankers. It's amazing what's happening. They, their children, they're starting to send their children to day schools. They're putting tefillin on daily. He's a guy who's one of the biggest investment bankers in America today. And he calls me up. He says, it's now 21 days in a row. I said, I hope you didn't put it on Shabbos, you know? 21 days in a row. There's another guy who's building a $1 million yacht for himself. So we're now, he made his home kosher, so we're now fighting of whether the yacht is going to be kosher. He just went to Norway to order the yacht, the new yacht. The $850,000 yacht is not good enough. It's an amazing thing. Random House is now publishing the Steinsaltz Talmud. You have to see it. You have to see it to believe it. It's the most beautiful publication I've ever seen. It's beautiful. And they're hoping to publicize and to get every Jew to study the Talmud. One of the greatest women of letters in America, maybe in the world, is a sympathetic traditional Jew, Cynthia Ozick, who's definitely, in my mind, going to win the Pulitzer, if not going to win the Nobel Prize soon. And she's a sympathetic Jew. These influences are having profound impact. And it's not only that, but some of the Baalei Tshuva themselves are providing an example that's hard to believe. For instance, there's a young man by the name of Jim Pitesky. Jim Pitesky was a banker with Morgan. He was a graduate of Wharton, and he had a great job with Wharton. And he decided, Nafshi Choshka LaTorah, I must go to Israel to learn Torah. Now, Morgan is not known as a sympathetic place for Jews, certainly for Orthodox Jews, but they gave him off, and he was so good that they said, if you come back in a year, we'll see if your job is available. He came back after a year, they offered him the job, and he says, I have to go for a second year. He came back after the second year, and they still offered him the job, and instead he enrolled in Near Israel in Baltimore and was studying to be a rabbi. Now he's sitting in the Kollel in Breuers, married a firm girl, and he'll probably go back to investment banking, but now he's an enriched Jew. Tom Steinberg, a graduate of Yale, Stanford Business School, the day that he was appointed vice president in real estate of Goldman Sachs, he told them that he's taking off with his wife and newly born twins to learn from Israel. They also offered him his job back when he came back after the year. And after the second year, he went back also. And instead of even asking for the job, he just talked to the senior vice president of Goldman Sachs about him taking off the year, and maybe he should go there as well. And there's a whole slew of people in the real estate department in Goldman Sachs who have become traditional, and at least one of them has become Orthodox. One of the most amazing stories is a person you might know, and that's the story of Patricia Papik, Pat Papik. Pat was the national sales director of Anne Klein II. When they expanded Anne Klein and opened up the division of Anne Klein II, started from scratch, and she built it into a division with over $300 million of sales. Now, the owner of Anne Klein II, the owner of Donna Karen, is a man by the name of Mr. Taki. He's a Japanese, diminutive Japanese, and he owns Anne Klein. Now, Pat Popick's background is her father is a Pat, what do they call that? A pit boss in Las Vegas. Now, I didn't know what a pit boss was until he came to my house, okay? And he came with all the rings and et cetera, et cetera. He basically runs the crap shows in the casinos. And she said to Mr. Taki, after building this company up, she says, Mr. Taki, I've experienced the connection with my roots, and I must go for 6 months to study in Israel. So Mr. Taki, who is a paternal man, Japanese man, he says, okay, Pat, you go. Not only that, but we'll make sure that your health benefits are taken care of. But I'm warning you, after 6 months, I expect you back. So she took off, went to Neve Yerushalayim, studied in Neve for 6 months. And after 5 months, she wrote Mr. Taki a letter saying, Mr. Taki, I can't come back. He telegrammed her and said, Pat, I'm coming to get you. Pat, I'm coming to get you. Erev Nishgefoil, he wasn't lazy. He took his private jet. He landed at Lud Airport, at Ben-Gurion Airport. Rabbi Revson, the head of Neve, was waiting for him there, along with Pat. They took him, the Japanese guy, into the classes in Neve. He sat through the classes in Neve. And he said to Pat, you have my blessing. Stay for the end of the year. Pat came back, and she was appointed a higher position at Anne Klein. She stayed for about 3 months, and now was the executive director of Neve Yerushalayim in America. And not only that, but took her Gentile secretary along with her. You have to see the secretary. She talks Yiddish. I, you know, it's unbelievable. She says, I hope you're going to find me a shidduch. You know, she's like, on Wednesdays, at 1 o'clock, on West 28th Street, in a loft, a group of executives from record companies and music people get together voluntarily with no rabbi and study Torah for 2 hours every Wednesday at 1 o'clock in a loft. This includes two former music directors of Saturday Night Live. It includes some of the biggest executives in record companies. It includes the son of the designer John Weitz, Bo Weitz. It includes a prominent American sculptor. And at times, it includes a Baal Tshuva rock star by the name of Peter Himmelman. Peter Himmelman is a rock star who grew up in Minnesota, very, very similar to Bob Dylan, whose second record was reviewed in the New York Times last year to rave reviews, and it's entitled Gematria. Peter Himmelman showed up at the beginner service one day, and I didn't recognize him, so I said, he asked the question, so I said, what's your name? So an American rock star introduces himself and says, my name is Pesach Ben Moshe. He married Bob Dylan's daughter in a Hasidic wedding. And he made a deal with the record companies that he would shave his beard if they guaranteed that he wouldn't have to work on Shabbos. Steve Reich, one of America's foremost percussion composers, is the founder of the Beginner Service at Lincoln Square Synagogue. Eddie Jacobs, an actor in Bono. It's a new environment. It's a heady times. It's an opportunity literally to turn and to change the landscape of America. It's an opportunity to stop the hemorrhaging of the American Jewish community. It's what we call in Jewish philosophy and Jewish thought, Shat HaKosher, a propitious moment. It's like everything is coming together. It's like amazing. TV Guide, not too long ago, published a study of the George Gallup organization, which says that the 1990s is going to be the decade of religion, that it's going to grasp large numbers of people. Arthur Hertzberg, in his new book about the American Jewish community, Arthur Hertzberg is a conservative rabbi, says that if there is not a revival of religion in the Jewish community, there will not be a Jewish community left. But it's happening. It's happening through seminars, through programs, through Eish HaTorah discoveries, through outreach workers. One of the credits that was given to me before was that I'm the president of the Association of Jewish Outreach Professionals in America. Zalman Bernstein, who heads a fund, Avichai Fund, which presently only has $25 million in it, which is directed to outreach, did a study of outreach organizations in America. We thought when we started, and I thought I knew the field, that there were about 25 different outreach organizations in America. We're up to about 300 and counting. Everybody and his sister is starting an outreach organization, which is wonderful. And there are thousands of individuals who are doing outreach, which is also wonderful. Because without that energy, we're really not going to be able to make a dent because there are tens of thousands, there are hundreds of thousands of people who want it. I know. Because by accident, we fell into this. About a year and a half ago, we started an organization called the National Jewish Outreach Program. And my vision of it was to establish environments where Jews could be welcomed, and really to replicate the wonderful example of what we developed at Lincoln Square Synagogue. Now, Lincoln Square Synagogue, which is a local institution, has somewhere between 75 and 125 Balei Tshuva a year, which is probably the largest Baal Tshuva center in the world in terms of numbers. And if we could replicate that, and that was my hope, we could replicate that throughout the country and turn every shul into an outreach center, then we could really change America. But it took us about 8 months to develop the materials to train synagogues to start beginner services. So instead, we started with Aleph Beis courses to offer to teach people Aleph Beis. And we started with modern techniques, modern marketing. So we came up with ad slogans like, this Rosh Hashanah, pray in the original, this Hanukkah, give yourself a gift of Hanukkah, give yourself a gift of Hebrew, this Passover, experience the Exodus from right to left. How to read a 5,000-year-old language in 5 easy lessons. And we marketed it in such a way, you know, like 5 lessons. We'll teach you Aleph Beis in 5 lessons, 5-hour and a half lessons. You would have said 6, they would have said too much, you know. And we also let them feel that they were getting something from us, you know. We had an 800 number, you call 1-800-44-HEBREW, so it doesn't even cost them a penny, okay? We send them the books and we send them the teachers, etc., etc. Well, we thought in our first year that if we would reach 800 people, that would be a phenomenal success. Because after all, you know, 125 at Lincoln Square, and if we do it nationally, 800 would be a great number. We got foundation grants, etc., and we hoped that we would do it in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. At last count, we're up to 19,000 Jews in 27 states, just in America, who have been taught to read Hebrew and are clamoring for more. So for instance, in New York, we taught 7,000 Jews how to read Hebrew, in the New York area alone. And only in New York, on Rosh Hashanah, did we offer a special course called a Crash Course in Basic Judaism. We call 1-800-44-TORAH, and we'll teach you belief in God, and prayer, and sexuality, and Shabbos, and basic Jewish observance, etc., etc. 7,000 people were offered that course. And they were offered it in about 30 different locations in New York. 1,500 people enrolled and took the course. That's a 20% return. That's amazing. And they're clamoring because the others say we weren't able to make it. It was wrongly scheduled. It was the wrong time of the year. We were away, this, that. They're driving us crazy because we have an 800 number they can call for free. So again, you know how Jews are. We did turn Friday night into Shabbos, which is a Shabbos Friday night experience with 6,000 Jews throughout the country. We started 45 beginner services throughout the country. And what happened was, like, we didn't go into 27 states. They're calling from Wichita. We want this. You know, Wichita wants this. Wichita. I mean, they got 5 Jews in Wichita, but they want it. San Diego, Detroit, and you have to understand what's happened as a result of that. Believe me, I did not, you know, no one could give me the credit and say what a brilliant idea it was, because we never anticipated. 6 guys in Washington, D.C. took the Hebrew crash course, and 3 of them are now in Eretz Yisrael learning Torah. Enrolled in yeshiva. 2 people in Marietta, Georgia, sold their homes and moved to Atlanta so they'd be closer to the shul because of an Aleph Beis course. The grandchildren of Max Fisher and Alfred Taubman in Detroit have taken the Hebrew crash course. Last Friday night in the Marble Arch Synagogue in England, they did turn Friday night into Shabbos. In Quito, Ecuador, they started a beginner service. In Quito, Ecuador! There are 200 Jews in Quito, Ecuador. They have a beginner service. They did a crash course in Judaism, a crash course in Hebrew. It's an amazing thing. In South Africa, in Australia, in New Zealand, in Switzerland, we had to like go crazy because the woman called us from Switzerland, from Zurich, and she says, listen, you must send me the tapes. So we sent her the tapes, and the tapes didn't work because it was an American system videotape. You know, it didn't work. So what happens? I call a company, and the guy turns out to be a Baal Tshuva. And he says, I'll make you the system for nothing. So he made us the PAL tapes, you know. It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. In the old city of Jerusalem, there's now a beginner service. This is a revolution which is rapidly gaining momentum. And one of the important things is, and this is what we need to underscore. The Talmud says, Kol ha-mekayim nefesh achat b'Yisrael kilu kiyem olamah. Anyone who sustained a single life in Israel is as if he sustained a whole world. Today, we have an opportunity not to sustain a single life, but 1,000 lives. Tens of thousands of lives. The truth of the matter is, I mean, for us, it costs $25 to engage a Jew in Judaism. $25. It costs $25,000. Weissman will want the $25,000 to ransom the remaining 20,000 Jews in Slovakia. And they couldn't raise it. $25,000 a Jew. We have an opportunity to ransom Jews. In other words, for $1 million, you would ransom 20,000 Jews. 2,000 Jews. We can, for $1 million, ransom 50,000 American Jews. There are approximately anywhere between 2 and 3.5 million unaffiliated Jews in the United States. It's clear now that there are close to 3.5 million. Because the newspapers reported not too long ago that only 1/3 of the American Jewish community contributes to UJA, which is the lowest common denominator of Jewish affiliation. If you don't get to the UJA, you don't belong to B'nai B'rith, and you don't belong to Hadassah. It means you're unaffiliated. Approximately anywhere between 2 and 3.5 million Jews. We're hemorrhaging. And the truth of the matter is that they're waiting for us to tap them on the shoulder. You can today save a Jew. You can make a baal tshuva for the price of a chicken. All you have to do is cook a chicken. A chicken. You know what a chicken is, right? If you can't cook it, then you can go to Meal Mart, Essen West, or Negev. You have three options. And you can even buy it fully cooked. That's in a place that specializes in chickens at Empire. Okay? Empire, if you want. Bring that chicken home and invite your next door neighbor for a Shabbos meal. You cannot imagine what a dramatic impact that has on a Jew. You've heard Mark Wiener tell of his experience of Friday night. Mark Wiener comes into shul Friday night, Lincoln Square Synagogue. He's never been in shul. Saturday, it's Friday night, it's like 8:15, it's a summer, it's like 90 degrees outside, the guy's all sweated up, he comes in, someone taps him on the shoulder, he says, how would you like to come home to me for Shabbos? So like, you know, there's the West Side, he doesn't know if it's a pass or something like that. So the guy says, honest, there are other people there, you know, honest, there are other people there. It's a Shabbos meal, a Shabbos dinner. He says, okay, I'm game. So he goes outside, he asks the guy, where do you live? He says, like 110th Street. So Wiener, like, sticks out his hand, he wants to hail a cab. So the guy says, oh no, this is Shabbos, you can't hail a cab. He says, we can, huh? So we have to walk. So they walk to 110th Street. Wiener is dripping from sweat. And the guy says he lives on the 19th floor. So he says, this is it. I'm not doing it, buddy. I don't care what you're doing. So he says, okay, we'll like compromise. There's a way if you go into an elevator and you don't push the button, someone else pushes the button. And if it goes too high, we'll walk down. If it goes too low, we'll walk up. Okay, so they're standing in the elevator. And someone comes by, looks in. He sees the two people standing there. He says, oh, it must be broken. He walks away. A little old lady walks into the elevator and asks Mark Wiener, where are you going? So he says, wherever you're going. So she starts screaming, help! So then a guy comes in with a shopping bag, with a shopping cart, with laundry, presses basement, and they go down, and the guy does, you know, two wash cycles and a dry cycle, and he comes back, and he says, oh, how nice of you to wait for me. And he presses one, he didn't even live in the building, and he goes out. So finally they walk up to the 19th floor and he gets into the house and he sees everybody's holding a cup for Kiddush, but he didn't know what that was. So he raises the cup, he says, I'd like to make a toast to the host. Everybody looks at him and then they announce that it's time to wash. So he smells his underarms. He says, I bathed today. He says, no, this is ritual washing. So they get online for ritual washing and he notices that everybody like has a ring in their mouth. And he's not wearing any jewelry. So he turns to the woman behind him, he says, you mind if I borrow your bracelet? You know. It's a galechta, it's funny, but it's true. It's hysterical, but it's true. It has the most dramatic impact. You take these people who never had a Shabbos exposure, and you just invite him to your home for Shabbos. First of all, it has an impact on your Shabbos. It makes your Shabbos more meaningful. But it also has a dramatic, dramatic impact on the people there. And if each of us would, once a month or twice a month, invite 2-3 people to their home for Shabbos, we could change the landscape of this neighborhood. And, you know, if you're talking about the revival on the Upper West Side that was worthy of making the front page of New York Magazine, it's really not. Because Lincoln Square Synagogue and Oed Tzedek Baruch Hashem and the other places on the Upper West Side that are dynamic, Shlomo Kalbach and Oed Shalom, and coming alive and bringing people in, the truth of the matter is that in Lincoln Square Synagogue's backyard, there are 9 gigantic buildings, 30-story tall, that house 10,000 unaffiliated Jews. Right there is 10,000 unaffiliated Jews. So what kind of success are you talking about? Oh, 125 Bali Tshuva a year, yeah. Baloney. It's not even a scratch on the surface. It's a tragedy that in the backyard of Lincoln Square Synagogue is a building, our buildings, with 10,000 unaffiliated Jews who are waiting to be touched. And the Upper West Side has hundreds of thousands of unaffiliated Jews who are waiting to be touched. Let me close with a little bit of a Dvar Halacha. You know, in the Haggadah, the Passover Haggadah, the Pasuk, the verse brought down for the Rasha, for the wicked son, is a Pasuk in Shmos, from Parshas Mishpatim, and it says, V'hayaki yomru aleichem v'neichem, ma ha'avodah hazos lachem, excuse me. It says, Rasha mahu omer, it says, wicked son, what does he say? Ma ha'avodah hazos lachem. What is this service that you do? Or avodah, this work that you do? The truth of the matter is that the question that I'm most frequently asked, and I want you to know that because of my different roles at Lincoln Square, National Jewish Outreach, and then at the Association of Jewish Outreach Professionals, I could spend like a full day a week just answering newspaper and media inquiries. That's, everybody, you know, it's the hot issue today. And the question that I'm most frequently asked to explain is, you know, what do you need these rituals for? What do you have to, like, wash your hands, and you gotta, you know, wear certain clothes, and you gotta look this way, and you gotta, what do you need this ritual life for? That's the question that the Rasha asks in the Haggadah. But the truth of the matter is that in the Pasuk in the Torah, it doesn't really say that. The Pasuk in the Torah says, V'hayaki yomru aleichem v'neichem, and it shall come to pass when your children ask you. It doesn't say if they ask you, it says when your children ask you. And the truth of the matter is that every intelligent Jew should ask this question. Every child should ask this question. And if your child doesn't ask this question, and if you didn't ask this question, then there's something wrong with your existential religion. What do we need this for? Who needs the rituals? What do you need this mindless observance? Big deal if you walk four cubits without your skull cap on. Big deal if you wash your hands with a ring on and you pour right, left, right, left. Who needs it? What do you need it for? And the answer the Torah gives, well, the answer the Haggadah gives, the Haggadah basically says, Afata hakeyeshinav. You make his teeth stand on edge. You tell that Rasha, you sock it to him. And you make his teeth stand on edge, and you say, listen, if you were there, buddy, if you were there in Egypt with us, you would have rotted away with the Egyptians, and you wouldn't have been saved. But that's not the answer that the Torah gives. The Torah says that when your child asks you legitimately, Maha Avodah Zos Lachem, what is this observance for? What do we need to be observant? What do we have to be ritualistic Jews? Why do we have to be frum? What do we have to put tefillin on? Why do we have to wrap ourselves in the talis? So the answer the Torah gives is, V'amartem zevach pesach u'la Hashem. Those of you who understand Hebrew should understand that this is a very strange answer. The answer, the reason that we're observant, we should tell them that this is a celebratory meal for the Passover that we're observing. Strange answer. That's how you're going to make a kid frum. kid who has existential questions about Yiddishkeit, an adult who has existential questions, you tell him this is a celebratory Passover meal that we're celebrating? What is the Torah saying? It's saying exactly the plea that I issued to you before. It's saying that you have to effect attitudinal changes in Jews. Instead of trying to give him initially a cerebral answer and trying to work out all the proofs of God's existence, etc., etc., you know what you should do? Invite him to your Pesach Seder. That's what the Torah is saying. Bring him to the Seder. Give him a little matzah, a little maror, a little harosis. After the arbakosis, he won't be able to keep his eyes open. And then you subliminally address the question. You want to know why we live this lifestyle? You want to know what it's all about? Have some harosis. Have a little matzah. Have a piece of chicken. A little gefilte fish. Sing some songs with us. Sing Chag Gadya. Sing Dayen. Sing Manishtar. Celebrate with us. What the Torah is really saying is become part of Jewish community. The most potent force that Judaism has, which is both its greatest attraction and also its greatest saving grace, is community. It's what we are doing now. Chevroshaft, it's coming together as Jews, intergenerational Jews, and celebrating together. Celebrating the love of our sacred tradition together. The impact is enormous. In this environment, is an existential challenge. And they see the beauty right away. It like pierces through their very guts. We could do that. If we would mass an array of energy of the people in this room, and the people in that room, and the people upstairs, and the people in this shul, and the people in that shul, and those people who are already committed, and we would just galvanize our efforts, not to give up our...
My English is not so good, you know, but I will try. The truth is that when I come here in America, especially after 10 days that I've been here, I've been very... איך אומרים? סחוט. סחוט. אוי זה קרצ'ט. My English is not so good, you know, but I will try. The truth is that when I come here in America, especially after 10 days that I've been here, I've been very, איך אומרים, סחוט. סחוט. אויס בקווצ'ט. Why? You know that the Torah says that in Egypt, in Mitzrayim, the Jewish em avdu, the working avodat parech, perech. Rashi says, what is this avodat perech? That Paro gives the work that the woman supposed to do, and asking the man to do. And what the man is supposed to do, yes, the woman to do. Everybody is give, not his nature, what is have to do. That's it right, you know what I mean. The same thing, my nature is to take care of education, to teach kids, to help people, to give, not to pay. I come to America, it's avodat perech, I must to take, this is the verkehrt from my nature, you understand what I mean? And for them is man ausgequetscht here. And this is giving me the privilege when I come here right now, after a hard day, very hard day today, to stay for you, to see you, as a tire, brother and Schwester, come together. First of all, I want to thank the Ola for the whole idea from Tismach. And I want to bless you that this Tismach that Hashem help us, that is brought in Simcha, that everybody from you here, Be'ezus Hashem, became a chosn and a kallel this year. And a vayol men. In this parsha from this week, the Torah says that Hashem said to Avraham Avinu, "Ve'oyo zaracho ka'afar ha'aretz." Hashem bless Avraham Avinu and tell him that your children will be so much like afar ha'aretz. The earth, you know? Is that in English? Sense. Yeah. I have a special English language together, all together. Kafar Haaretz. Then the Torah says that Abraham Avinu, in the same parasha that you go to read Lag BaOmer, Lag BaOmer, I say, Lech Lecho, Lech Lecho, Abraham Avinu say to Hashem, Vayomer Avlo, Hashem Elokim, Ma titen, what you give me? Going. Hashem Elohim, ma titen me, what you give me? You say to Hashem, Vonoichi oilech ahiri. What I have, what happiness I have, that I have no children, have not nothing, nobody. And then Hashem tell him, Vayoytze o Yisro Achutzo, Hashem take Avraham Avinu eyesight, and Hashem tell to him, and say to him, Abeit no ha-shomayim, look in the shomayim, see the kohabim, what you call kohabim, stars, and they tell him, Koy Iyez Aracho. You see these stars? This is like, this is going to be your children. After Ben Hashem tell him, Avram answer, Ve'emin Bashem. He believe in God, Vayachshiveyo loy litzdaka. Hashem, thank for Avraham Avinu. Hashem yichshiv lo etze litzdaka. The Rebbe Shtorto must be rechnet. He condemned for tzedaka, that is belief. Here is a question. I come that Avraham Avinu say to Hashem, Hashem Elohim, matiteli, what you give me? What I have? I have nothing. I have no children. I have only Eliezer, Eved Avram, that take care of me. Hashem tell you in this parsha, Va'aya Zaracha Ke'afar Ha'aretz. Hashem promise you, tell you, that your children is going to be so much like Afar Ha'aretz, like the earth. Avraham Avinu מה צריך לשליסניק, הוא לא עושה את עצמו כאילו השם לא יבטיח לו כלום. השם, אברהם אבינו, say to השם after them, is looking like he's not here that השם tell him something, promised him something. He say to השם, what I have in my life? Only when השם tell him, take him out, and tell him look in the stars. And see the kohavim, and then the Torah says that he is believed. Why not believe before them? Why is not believe when Hashem tell him, "Vayasar achak afar haaretz," that your kids is going to be so much like the hell? Why is only believe when Hashem tell him that this, the your kids is like the star? And what is ve'echshiv lo litzdaka? Hashem thanks for Avraham that you believe in him. It's the first time that Avraham believed. Avraham believed in Hashem till his old 3 years. When Sholosh Ikiras Boilo, Avraham Avinu, when his old 3 years is going and he asks, who built this world? Who created this world? And he believes. And what is the big thing that Hashem says in the Torah, Vayachshiveyo lo litzdaka? The answer is that Hashem built this world with 2 ideas. One idea is, maybe my English is not so good, but you understand what I want to say. One idea is Aretz. Arzius, you know what is Arzius? Gashmiut. What do you call Gashmiut? Materialism. Aretz is materialism. Afar Aretz is materialism. This world. Oilam Hazeh, the Taibes, the Anoes, this world, materialism. And another idea is Shomayim. Ruchnius. Spiritual, yeah? Ruchnius. The whole idea from Hashem is that the Jewish take the materialism and make from them spiritual. He take this Aretz and make from the Aretz Shomayim. For them Hashem created the whole world. The whole world that Hashem created is only because that the Jewish people, the Jewish take this world and make from them spiritual. Let's say I go to drink. I take the water and I say, Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam She'akol Nihyeh Midvoreh. I take the bread Moitzi Lechem Min Haoretz. I bench. I stay up in the morning from sleep. I say, Moideh Ani Lefanecho. I go to sleep. I say, Shema Yisroel. I make money. I give myself. I help people, I give tzedakah. Everything what I do is only because to make from this materialism spiritual. The goyim, Goyim can be materialism. For them, Hashem created him to be materialism, that the world have a kiyum. What do you call a kiyum? Exist. We must have many, many Goyim, that the Goyim build and exist the Olam Hazeh. But the point from the Olam Hazeh is that the Jewish people is making from the Olam Hazeh, making Shomayim. When Avraham Avinu hear that Hashem tell him, V'haya zaracha ke'afar ha'aretz, that your children is going to be like afar ha'aretz, held, held, not a fasti banquet, dust.
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 Dust. Dust of the earth.
Dust of the earth, okay. As Hashem, Avraham Avinu hear this, he say to Hashem, V'yoymer Avraham, Avraham say to Hashem, Ein li, to me, Avraham Avinu, lo natata zera, that is not children for me. If you're going to give me children materialism, only to eat and to drink, and to make a living in money, in tithes, I don't need this children. This is not my philosophy in my life. I don't believe in that. I have Eliezer, I have my shamash, what you call, my secretary, Eliezer. I have my secretary Eliezer. Eliezer is going in Columbia University, and he's teaching in the Columbia, what you call, economic, and he's taking care of my whole business, and the bank is okay, and everything is not going down. And is not putting the money in the stocks market, and everything is okay. If my kids is going to be materialism, afar haaretz, then I have Eliezer. It's good for me. Ein li lo inosot azera, vine ben meshek beisi, yoyresh esi. Then Hashem take him out, and Satan look in the himu, shomayim. You see the stars? Ko iezaracha. This is going to be your children. Your children is going to be like stars. Your children is going to be shomayim. All the kids thinking by Hashem, making from this belt shomayim. Oh, when Avraham hears this, he say, ve'emin b'Hashem. Emin emuna is not only believes, say, this is what I want, Hashem. I believe, I want, I look forward for them. Then, by Achshiveyo Eloi Litzdaka, Hashem thanks Abraham that he wants that his kids is going to be like all the kids. And this is the whole idea from Judaism, that every Jewish, every Yehudi, Tzarich, Chabad, that Hashem created him of this world, only in the honor of Hashem, only to win the Megash. Baruch Elohikeinu Shebrahanu Lichvodo. I bless you, God, that you created me for your honor. What is your honor? To let know the whole world, the whole, that Hashem is the creator from this world. You know, someday I fly from here, from New York, to Florida. And National Airlines. National Airlines. Huh? So it's a bomb?
Yeah.
It's going bankrupt. Okay. National Airlines.
10 years ago.
And I go, and I sit in the plane, and I sit in the plane, and I song. Zaydim elitsuni, elitsuni yad meyoid, mitoiros koloi noti yisi, yai yai, mitoiros koloi noti yisi. And Ivan Stoddard going and see that a rabbi is like me with the prayers, you know, singing. She asked, who is this man? And the man that sit next to me, say that is the disco rabbi from Israel. She asked, what is that? the first time, what is the disco, Rabbi, what is the disc? And this man explain you. So Rabbi Pesach Grund, go and meet again at this time. He has to explain you, this is the rabbi that taking care of the boys and the girls. She say, Menashe Maim, she say, Rabbi, I've been also a Jew. My name is Miriam, and did what I know about Judaism. The only thing that I know about Judaism, that my name is Miriam. But what is a Jew, I don't know. Maybe, Rabbi, you can tell me what I have to do to have a feeling to know that I've been a Jew. I tell you right away, I tell you, you see, if somebody flying want to eat kosher, he order special kosher, you know, this medekovel, this temple, I tell you, if you also, when you're going on the plane, you walk off the plane, if you order, you eat only kosher, then you have a feeling that you're a Jew. She asked me, what is kosher? She think maybe this is vegetarian, or maybe this is what you call vitamins. She not know what is kosher. Maybe by kosher is vitamins, special vitamins, or vegetarian. No, go to teach here in middle of the plane what is kosher. Make the other, meaning salts, salts, and kosher, you know. Then I tell to him, you know, here is a big company, a car company, that is called Ford. Yeah. You know that Ford make trucks? Ford make big trucks? Yes. You know that also Ford make regular cars, special good cars. Special, I don't know the names, but you have cars. Yeah. What gasoline put in, what you call, diesel. What gasoline put in, the regular cars, the good cars, regular?
I-test.
What I-test? Is
that a gas?
Okay, I-test. I-test. What is cheaper? The diesel. Diesel is cheaper from the items. And I ask you, here is a gas station, here is a truck from Ford, and here is a regular car from Ford. This put in diesel, cost them, let's say, a dollar, and this put in I-test, is put in $2. I tell them why. This man that is in the regular car can say, if this is made by Ford, and my car is also made by Ford, I will also put in my car the diesel. And I ask you, but if you put in diesel, is working the diesel? No, the car is not working. Why? It's going to be Saturn, what you know Saturn? Saturn. Why? That Ford make this truck, a truck, a machshir, a mikshu, bifnim, the heavy. What you call a mikshu, bifnim. In the machinery is heavy. You can put in what you call a diesel, in this, it is working. But this machine, the regular, the good machine, is very sensitive. And if you put in diesel, then it's stuck. You must put in the special that is more clear, more... I tell you the same thing, look for Hashem. Like Hashem is Ford, the company Ford. I explain. Hashem created the goyim like the trucks. In Hashem created the Jewish like the cows. Why? That in the Jewish Hashem put in something in the mechshu, what you call, in the machine, in the machine, in the Jewish inside, you have the neshome that is called Elohikai Neshomo Shenosato Bi Teolai. You say every morning that every Jewish Hashem give him a special soul, that this soul is a chelek me Hashem. You know, it is a chelek, a part. In every Jewish you have a part from Hashem, you must believe. In this part, like in Migdal HaEmek, you have is built a big company that is called National Semiconductor. You hear me through this? What is National Semiconductor doing? And make the little jukes, like they call it.
Chips.
The computer chips. This little computer chip, this is taking care of many, many, I don't know why. And everybody from us may have this little, what you call chip. What is this? The neshome. The neshome from Hashem, chelek Elohikai mimam. If you put in not kosher, is like you put in a regular car, the diesel. And then you're stuck. The mind is stuck, you have not good feeling, you don't have closeness to Hashem, you have questions of Hashem, you have questions of Emune, you have trouble. Why? The body take the old closing, the old feeling that the neshome want to give you. But the goy can put in diesel, can eat rave, and what they want, and everything is working, is holding again. That's what I explained this girl. And thank God I give her address in Florida. And she met, I have a cousin in Florida, Rabbi Groner, and she come to Rabbi Groner, and little by little she come back to Yiddishkeit, these students from this plane that we're going in the plane. What I want to say, that the most important, what I want to give you the message, I can stay here for the whole night with you. If I have this day, very hard day, and before I come here, I visit a doctor. But Baruch Hashem, and I see you, everything is going correct. I feel much better than that. The message must to be that every Jewish must to have a feeling on to teach himself that he is a chelek Elohikai mimam. He have is a chelek, is a part from Hashem. Right now is the time that you don't see anything. The Torah says that is coming a time before Moshiach, Moshe Rabbeinu has tell us, Ve'onoichi astir et panai ba'et ayin. Hashem says before Moshiach will come, and he astir, what you call astir in English? Right? Right? More from it. Astir. Sometime you have something secret, but you know that it's a secret. Sometime it's so secret that you don't know that it's a secret. You don't know anything about that. Let's say I know that Israel ever told. But Israel say no. Don't know. No, nobody see this. Huh? Yeah, Astir. Esponai bo eis ayi. Moshiach, before Moshiach will come, you don't see anything. But everybody can find Hashem if he want to find him. If he teach himself to remember that everything what is need, he must to ask for Hashem. Everything what is going to do, he must to pray for Hashem. And when you pray, and you have this feeling that Hashem is close to you, then you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can see him with your eyes. I tell you that I know many from you, I understand and I know is all aggravation, I have not the word in English, and it's all life, many from you are difficult. It's not so difficult, but the mentas is difficult. You understand what I mean? It's not as a schwer der Matzev. But the mind is going, what is going to be, what is going to Ashidach, and what I'll do with the work, and what I'll do with friends, and what everybody have you. If I will take from you cup, the other problem, that will fall the ganze shoulder. You know what I mean? But if you will think that Hashem take care, and you only must to pray to Him and to ask Him and to speak to Him, that everything was looking different. Baruch Elokeinu Sheboronu Lichvoido. The whole idea that Hashem created this world to take your body and to make from your body holiness. Elokut, that you've been the boss from your body. Someday I go in Tel Aviv, near the biggest office from the army, you know, Kiryah, maybe somebody from Tel Aviv, from Israel that visit, no. The main place that the chief of staff from the army is in Tel Aviv. Many soldiers. I see our soldiers is very hungry, and they stay in a kiosk, not kosher. And they wait to take a sandwich with naknit, salami, not to take salami. I go to this soldier, and I ask him, shalom, you know what is a soldier? Yeah. So of course, a soldier is to be a gibbo, you know, a fighter. Before you're going to shoot or to doing something, what you're doing, you say, I think. First thing, I think. You know that 5 minutes from you is a kosher place. And right now you have a problem. Your body wants to eat. Yeah? So who does? What do you tell? So I said, it's trouble.
Rumbling.
You want to eat?
Talking,
you want to eat? If you started with your cup, and you say, I've been a Jew, אני יהודי, אני לא יכול ללכת לאכול בתימן. I must take care. Then, the mind, the cop, give a telegram for the house, to your house, take it easy. Wait. In your house, is give a telegram to the liver. You know, the whole problem from the body is the liver. He is making the whole... I tell to the liver, wait, I'm going to eat kosher, 5 minutes. Then, you start up with your cup. What is your cup in Hebrew? Moach. Moach, what is Moach? Men. Men. The men ask the lev. What is lev? Lamed. The lamed ask to the liver, kaved. What is kaved? Chach. What is mem lamed chach? Melech. What is melech? A king. What is a king? Take care. You be the boss. What is a king is Ivan the Shulton. But Eve is going fakert, the liver started, the liver tell to the house, Bremen is in Kopf. The liver tell to the house, not think, I must to eat, I must to fill up my body, this is the most important right now. Then is half lamed man, you need a vaf, is a klum. You know what is klum? You've been a nut. Or you've been nothing, or you've been a king. And this is not only by eating. Everything that you want to do, you want to speak, you want to look, you want to hear, you must take care, first of all, your mind. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, created me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, want that I became holy. Helikite, holy. And then, you're looking different, you hear different, you speak different, you've been a different man. That's the whole work that must work inside. That's the whole idea from, that is Hashem said to Avraham Avinu, Ba'oyo zaracho ke'afar ha'aretz. Your children will go be like the stars. I remember, I tell you about Florida. I don't remember this time, but I think the first time that I come to Florida, I don't know English, I don't know anything. Somebody give me a card and say, when you come down, you take a taxi, take you to our hotel. Some from the hotels, I don't know, in Florida. I come to Florida, I come and take a taxi, you take me to a hotel. When I come, that is in the summer, you know, the hotel is El Dorado. And I come and I see, it's a not familiar this place, you know. I see that I fall in, but I'm gefallen. Then I have two chances. I can two choices. I can go, nobody know me. I can go out in the what you call the hotel. I can take my cartilage. I take my papers like this. You see, in Florida, everybody is going a white casket. You know, I can buy in 2 minutes. Like I don't know why, and I go in a yacht. You know what is a yacht? You know, what's a yacht? A yacht. I go in a yacht, and I can look, and nobody know that is Rabbi Grossman. Nobody know me. This is one choice. The other choice is, I come in, and I say to the, give me a key, and I go in my room, and first of all, I close the door. The window. They say, when you look downstairs, you know what you see. You open the window, and I open up the gemore, and I say, Rabbi Mishalolom, you give me a nisoyen, you know what is a nisoyen, a test. Rabbi Mishalolom, you give me a test. Help me to come by this test. Kol ha'olam kulo, male nisyono. Male nisyonot, male nisyonot, kol ha'olam kulo, male nisyonot, male nisyonot. Ve'yayikar, ve'yayikar, le'yitgaber, aleyem ve'yayikar. You must know that everybody have the koach, what you call the koach?
Strength.
Strength to come by the missionaries. I have, thank God, hundreds of prisoners, out prisoners, that stay in jail for 12 years. And today is tzaddikim mamash. Sitting, learning in Dublin, you must know these people, these prisoners, is all life is in crime. And to change himself complete, to take care of his eyes, of his moil, of his scop, to sit and learning in Dublin, it's not so easy. Very, very, very hard to change himself. But ein davar ha'omed bifnei ha'ratzon. Everybody have inside their strength, the koach, to change himself. I remember someday, maybe I tell this here, Shabbos, I go in a prison, I go many to me have Migdalor, besides the thousands of children that me have, the dormitories, the girls, the boys, me make a big rehabilitation programs in the jails. And so success, that the government give permission that Migdalor have his jail in Yeshiva in Afula, is in the law, is going in that is a jail. In the last 18 months, the deep prisoners stay in the regular jails and became Baluchuba rehabilitation, the government send them the last 18 months to mine jail, to the jail from Migdalor in Afula, and then he find new friends, regular Bochrim, and thank God the last 4 years we make close to 40 weddings from this business. I find them callous, and I find them, I make them shituchim, and I make him his living and everything. But I want to tell you, Someday, I spoke in a jail, and you know the situation in the jail is very hard. Israel, I think, never built, maybe one jail he built himself. The old jails is old buildings from the time from England. He thinking like a factory from Tabak, he make it for a jail. And then it take, in a small place that you can't take in, let's say five people, put in 30 people, 20 people. This is, you no belief of the sleep of this. You tell me, a regular davening is like Rosh Hashanah, like Yom Kippur. Like Yom Kippur. You see that if the boy want to be better, want to walk himself, he became different. Maybe I will end with one story more. I would like to tell you, to sit with you and to explain you the most important what I want. I want to have a mitzvah this night.